Y'all good?
Yep.
All right. Okay.
Is everybody's mics working?
This is working, Gary. Did you check your?
Yeah,
this is
working. Yeah, you're good. Okay, now I'm ready.
All right. Okay, so we're ready to call the meeting to order on April 18th. And if we can start with a roll call.
Commissioner Madigan?
Here.
Commissioner Geary?
Here.
Commissioner Anderson?
Here.
Commissioner Blackburn?
Here.
Commissioner Tiger?
Here.
Commissioner Perez?
Not here.
Next, item B, if we could have an approval of summary of proceedings for March 21st, 2018.
I'll make the motion that I have some corrections.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
One second.
Okay. We'll check in after the correction.
Okay.
That's what I thought.
All right. Well, we do
the second chapter discussion.
Okay.
So this is
okay.
On page two, I just wanted to add just a little statement, and the large paragraph at the bottom, right at the middle, it says the public asking Commissioner Madigan if she was aware of Chairperson Anderson's affiliations with AKC, which Commissioner Madigan responds she was aware. Then I was asked my opinion, and I replied that my opinion was not relevant at that point. On page three, the large paragraph under Director's Monthly Report, kind of in the middle, way over on the right, it says Lynn asked Director Cullen, and I'm not sure who Lynn is, or do I just not know somebody?
She said the name Lynn. I think Nick said Lynn, but I don't. It was she didn't say her last name.
Okay, but that is correct.
Yeah.
I thought maybe
yes.
It was somebody else. Okay.
She's a frequent.
And then under volunteer update, at the end of that paragraph, it says a question about one-day volunteers. I'm adding at the end of that, although there are procedures for one-day volunteers in other situations, because that was about dog walking. On page five, I'm quoting Ms. Keogh here. I'm going to stop her.
Not working, just her.
Paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4. It says, heard from Liz Keogh, added what Director Cullen said about the history of animal welfare in Prince County. Correct me if this is not right. I added, she also expressed her feelings that those speaking need to be willing to commit for the long haul. Is that correct, Liz Keogh?
I don't recall it, but that doesn't mean it isn't great. If you want to add it, throw it in.
Okay. Other people mentioned it to me, so I remembered it that way. On page six, there's a lot that I added here under my comments. But let's start at the very top, the very first line. I believe it was Ms. Viejos was showing pictures. She said shows pictures of 78 dogs that have been picked up off the streets since January, and I'm not sure January was correct.
It was. It was from the beginning of the year.
It was correct.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I thought that was a mistake. Okay. Then down in the section where it says, heard from Commissioner Madigan, I'm just going to read the paragraph as I have it written. Starting with, she spoke about the last time this issue had been considered, and I'm adding, in 2008, and what work had been done. She hands out copies of draft MSN ordinance, news reports, and staff assessments from 2008. She indicates that MSN is a difficult and polarizing endeavor, but willing to assist as appropriate, though it may not be an efficient use of community volunteer resources. Does that make sense, Amber?
Yes.
I have written there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Can I ask a question? Was the
identify yourself, please.
I'm Liz Keogh, K-E-O-G-H, proud resident of the 5th Supervisorial District. Were the contents of your handouts made public at the time? I do not believe they were.
The ones that I had, you mean?
Yes, that you just gave them.
I gave them to whoever wanted them. And I still have some left if some of you...
Okay, as I recall, you gave them to the commissioner.
No, there were some left over at the end of the meeting. She had extra.
I have some more if you want some.
I don't believe there was a motion to receive and file.
I know there
wasn't. That's what you're asking.
No, what I'm asking is a summary of proceedings is supposed to reflect what actually went on. Commissioner Madigan is adding detail that, to the best of my knowledge, was not made public at the time it occurred. And if this is to be an accurate record of the meeting, to identify these documents when they were not publicly identified is misleading.
But they were. I had them available for anybody.
But I don't think you said, and I'm handing out this and this and this and this and this.
And I said I have copies for each of the commissioners, each of the staff, and several left over for members of the public.
Well, just a note for the record, number one, this is a summary of proceedings. It does not detail the conversations or anything else. Number two, if it's not on the tape, Amber won't add it anyway. So, okay.
To the best of my recollection, there was not specific titles of documents given when they were handed out.
Yeah. To my recollection, I did, but it's not video.
So, do you want me to add that?
If it's on the tape,
I'll go back and look. I know,
but it's still a summary. I mean, the detail in conversation is not really necessary.
Yeah, you don't need it verbatim.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have any other corrections or additions? Okay. So, if we can have a vote on the motion, all in favor of accepting as corrected?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Can you just repeat who motioned and who was second? Do you remember?
Madigan motion.
Thank you.
All right. Item C, consent agenda. There's no correspondence filed, so we move on to item D, public presentations. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter that is not but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond to include statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. Please state your name and address for the record before making your presentation. We ask that you come to the podium to do it over here. You will be limited to 2 minutes. You will get a 10-second warning. And also, if I could ask everybody to please turn off your phones or turn your ringers down, and to have respect for the people that are speaking and allow them to speak with no comment or commentary. So with that, we will start. Front table. Okay, second row. On this side. Third row. This side.
I think we have a lot of BC students here, huh?
Welcome.
Anna from BC.
Awesome.
Excellent.
Welcome.
Okay, good.
Okay, fourth row.
Danny, over there, across. Fourth row.
Okay, fifth row,
right here.
I'll do this one. Okay, come on up. Podium, please. Please state your name and...
You're not being timed yet, no.
Address.
I know I gotta hurry. My name is Judy Hewitt, and I live in Tehachapi, and I live very close to the gentleman who had 160 dogs at his residence and was recently, the dogs were in animal control custody. So we had to endure this problem for probably 4 or 5 years. I had called animal control. I wish I had documented, but I can 30 times. Every time they would come out, they would say, "We'll check on it. There's really nothing we can do. We can cite him." That's what they would tell me every time. It got to the point. Let me go to the clock. It got to the point where the dogs would get out, 15 to 20 at a time, running up and down our street. They were chasing kids from the bus stop. I couldn't have my own dogs outside because of those dogs, and. The noise was horrendous. I don't know if anybody saw a video on the news. I recorded how loud at the time, that was last summer, 60 dogs sounds like. Times that by 100, and that's what we heard on a daily basis. Animal control would come out, but nothing was done. And I swear, I have PTSD, I swear. You know, I live right by this guy, and if I hear a dog, I think, oh my God, the dogs are back. And so my hope is that that the problem is solved and that this gentleman cannot have his dogs back. I wish the best for this man, I really do. But my question is, why did it take so long for something to be done? All of my neighbors on my street called for years and nothing was done. There was reports of dead animals on this property, there were cats, there were birds, and again, nothing was done. And so my question for whoever I'm speaking to is, why wasn't anything done? These animals were in serious danger and yelping on a daily basis, yelping from these animals. They were dying in that backyard, 160 dogs on one property.
Thank you. We'll direct it to Director Holly.
I can answer right now.
Okay.
So, dogs are property in the state of California. And in order for, and when you say you want something done, typically that means you want either the animals removed or you want the barking to stop. In order for us to remove animals from property, just like any other piece of property, we have to have probable cause to enter the residence to determine that there's a violation that has occurred. There's no law in the county of Kern that protects somebody from having 160 dogs. Now, there are laws that govern the treatment and care of those animals, and in order for us to hold somebody accountable, we have to see it. And in order for us to see it, we have to have probable cause that something is happening. So dogs off property is an infraction. It's not probable cause to obtain a search warrant and get into their backyard. Cats on property, birds on property is not probable cause to get a search warrant to search the house. Strictly having that many dogs, again, is not probable cause to enter the property. What finally gave us probable cause is when we paid a visit to the residence and we were able to see parts of the property that we hadn't seen before without violating anybody's civil rights and smell what led us to believe that the animals were being, their needs weren't being met. So then we have to go to a judge and prove to the judge that there's probable cause that there is a felony or a misdemeanor being created in the backyard. We had enough evidence in order to do that. And that's the only reason why we were able to take all those animals off property.
Yeah. But why did it take so long? It's a process. Thank you. Thank you, Nick.
Commissioners, anybody have anything?
It concerns me, but I don't know the details, so I can't make a judgment, but 5 years does seem like a long time.
Okay, I'm just assuming that, for instance, that the stray dogs, that someone actually did respond
yes.
to complaints. So there wasn't, like, no response that if there was a complaint, an officer, a valid complaint, officer would respond, and did, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
I think it's an unfortunate thing that happened. I'm glad it wasn't in my neighborhood because I would be having PTSD also. You know? They responded when you called, though, right? I mean, almost every time. I take it.
You know what? I can't even answer that. I called so many times. Okay. My neighbors called so many times that I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's a horrendous thing to live with and to be around. And then, of course, they had to, with 160 dogs, is that what it was that was... they were taken into custody?
Approximately.
Approximately, okay. Were they abused, malnourished, and
yes.
all the above? Or is it still going on?
It's still ongoing.
Okay, never mind. I retract that question. Anyway, unfortunate. I'm glad you came up to tell us about it because, you know, we don't hear all the details, but this is the right place to tell us about these kinds of experiences, and we'll do what we can to... You know, maybe in the future it won't be like that. We hope one day. But thank you very much
thank
for
you.
Coming all the way up here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Tager?
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? Nick, you explained legally why you couldn't do more earlier. Is there any change that could be made to regulation or ordinance that would have made it easier to address this earlier?
The animal owner was cited for a commercial animal facility permit about 7 times, which was about the only violation that we can get him for. The court system pretty much dismissed every last one of them. He was also cited for leash law about 12 times for dogs being off property. and license and vaccination violations probably about 20 times in the past 5 years. So I don't believe, the only thing that we could do that would alleviate the situation was to take his animals from him. And the only thing that would allow us to do that would be probable cause that a felony or a misdemeanor was being committed. And the conditions that the animals were in was the felony that we were ultimately able to seize the animals for. So in order to determine the conditions that they're being held in, we have to be on property and get eyewitness accounts of from an officer of the conditions.
The quantity of violations cannot escalate into a higher criminal charge of any kind, or progressive?
Quantity of violations
the progressive activities, even though apparently you said 7 violations were dismissed.
Quantity of violations of what violation?
All the citations that you...
So a barking complaint, if it's an infraction the first time, can be considered a misdemeanor the second or third time. But a commercial animal facility permit, there is no escalation, nor is a leash law violation. There's really no... It can escalate to a misdemeanor. But again, that's a citation that doesn't give us grounds to take anybody's animals from them.
But does it...
So yes and no is your answer.
Yeah, I guess I would like to, not knowing enough about it.
To answer your question, if you wanted a law that would prevent that from happening, you would have to enact a law that restricted the number of animals you can have in parcels larger than a quarter of an acre.
I guess what I want to know is
dog limit.
Is there a way that we can make it easier for these things to escalate? Can I make a staff referral to just give us a little summary on ways that we could... Changes that, other than quantity law changes, anything that would help escalate this situation quickly, either make changes to the way the charges for commercial facility were dropped, or the accumulation of all the citations, or what way could we have made this escalate quicker?
I don't know of any way that it could have escalated quicker until we got probable cause that a serious crime was being committed.
Working within the mandates of the law.
Commissioner, do you have an answer to that?
Yes, I do.
I knew you would.
It is possible to rewrite the ordinance in such a way that the first citation for a commercial failure to have the commercial animal facility permit is a citation, then you go up to misdemeanor, then you go up to felony, and say on the fourth citation, your animals are removed. You can put that in by ordinance, but there would have to be, for the removal of animals, there would have to be some safety concern. Unsanitary conditions, failure to feed, failure to thrive, failure to care for the animal, that kind of thing.
But an escalation up to a felony would at least... put pressure.
Yes, and your board has the ability to recommend an ordinance change to the Board of Supervisors.
Assuming the court system accepts the citation as issued.
Yeah, and that's the other problem. You're always going to have the fact that there is a disconnect right now with the court system for animal violations.
Okay, and how can we address that?
It's actually in the process of being addressed to some extent.
We're working on it, yeah. Right now, for whatever reason, the courts are using an old version of the Kern County Ordinance Code for animal control, and so I'm working to get them to the correct version, and I'm truly not sure why it is so difficult to get that updated, but we're working on it.
And just to extend on that, I don't know that all of the... at least the commercial citations that were issued that were dismissed because of a failure to recognize the new ordinance. It's just the decision of the court whether they decide to charge or dismiss, and we don't have any control over that.
And is this a pattern?
Yeah, well, and the DA has a say in it as well if they don't like the charges that were brought. So...
Okay, this is very interesting. I'd like to sit down and talk about it sometime down the road.
Would it make sense since I am in the middle of the commercial animal facility adding livestock, which I know is going to take a while to do that, but while doing that, to add the escalating, would that be in the body of the regulation? Sorry.
Number one, this board doesn't have the authority to actually write the new ordinance.
Right.
You can make a recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it requires a vote of the board before it's a recommendation that we take, or excuse me, it requires a vote of the commission before we take a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. So in that sense, you could rewrite it, the commission votes on it, and you take it to the Board of Supervisors as a recommendation to enact. At some point in there, it'll probably go through my desk and we'll write it up.
As long as we understand also that an escalation of a commercial animal facility permit violation doesn't necessarily give us any legal right to remove animals from property.
Right.
Yeah,
and
you're
but
still going to have
more pressure on the situation.
But if anything, what we are normally looking for is a way to get at the property in order to inspect the living conditions of the animals.
And if you have, yeah, if you have a felony charge in there for the failure to have the permit, then you can get a search warrant to go on property to look to see if they actually are operating commercial animals facility without a permit.
So that could put a search warrant in place then?
Could.
Possibly. Okay.
It depends on the judge that you speak to. I mean, again, you got to convince the judge that.
Right.
Allow something.
Okay. I got a quick question.
No.
As far as probable cause is concerned, an officer has to see this with his own eyes. What if a neighbor took a video of what was going on and went back there and took a video of the address and what was cooking and brought that to you? Would that give you grounds for some probable cause?
Again, probable cause is a justification to a judge, so the judge makes the decision. Whether a video is enough evidence for him to grant you access to a piece of property is up to him. Typically, we don't use pictures of video that's not taken by an officer,
okay.
Simply because it doesn't usually hold up in court, because the judge will ask, how do we know this is the right property? How do we know that this is this person's property? When was this taken? And there's a lot of questions there. More often than not, maybe all the time, probable cause is in the estimation of the officer who's on scene at that time. What they're seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, smelling.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are we taking questions?
There's questions.
Joan. Joan Payton. I don't know if this would solve the problem, but several years ago when this commission started, there was a hobby kennel permit. That permit allowed your officers to walk onto that permit holder's property at any time. With something like that, I mean, if that had been the case with this gentleman, once a year you would have been walking, at a minimum once a year you would have been going to his home.
Yes, but they have to hold the permit in order for us to have access to the property.
So if he doesn't have the permit,
he doesn't have
oh yeah, okay, I was thinking hold it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking that, you know, we used to have that, and you guys came out.
Unfortunately, the individuals that actually get the permit aren't the ones that we need to see.
It's following the bill. Do you think that if code enforcement would have gone to, say, for instance, see why he didn't have the commercial use permit, and then because since he was charged with not having one, and so then code enforcement should have maybe gone and said, okay, well, under the conditions of this charge, you need to get this permit. And then if they would have gone and looked at the property, I mean, that's kind of like they're in violation of the code. And that has absolutely nothing to do with animal control.
So the commercial animal facility permit is not code compliance or code enforcement. That's animal services.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't involve code enforcement at all. But when we issue somebody a citation for a commercial animal facility permit, it's simply because they have breeding that's occurring on property, or they're operating a business in some function. So until we have enough evidence that more than one litter a year is, which is usually pretty easy to determine, more than one litter a year is being born on property, they're in violation of the permit, a citation can be issued. Yeah.
Thank you.
So actually a call to code enforcement might have opened the door.
No.
No?
They wouldn't even go out.
Not about that issue. I just mean in general, code enforcement for the property.
To my knowledge, code enforcement was involved multiple times at that property.
Oh.
Okay, thank you for bringing that to us, Judy. Liz, you're welcome.
Just real quick, was it not the case that prior to a couple of years ago, these matters were, in fact, under code enforcement, and then we spent a lot of time and talked with Ms. Oviatt about bringing animal-related code matters under the animal ordinance? Is that not true, or am I misremembering?
No, that's correct. And now there are some planning ordinances that bleed over into animal welfare as well. But yes, that was a couple of years ago when that was adopted, yeah.
Thank you. Next.
Susan Richardson, 93306. Can't hear me. Usually everybody can hear me, even if I don't know. First of all, I want to thank Commissioner Madigan for asking some questions about this, because this is really a concern for the community as a whole, that situation. And I certainly understand. I hold a degree in criminology and a master's as well in that. I certainly understand the law. I can certainly understand some of your predicaments. I understand that sometimes it's DA's determination whether they file or not. I know this man has been cited several times. I did check. But one issue that I'm having with this is that you commented that the animal control officer has to see something in order to do something. If this guy was cited, then to me that says your officer saw something enough to be able to cite him. And I'm not asking you any questions. I'm just giving clues for thought. There's some of the questions running through my head. I have also been told that if I take videos of something, I can submit to animal control and they can use that by animal control officers. So, whether that's right or wrong, I'm letting you be aware. So if it's wrong, then you need to go back and kind of tell them, don't tell the public that, because it's not proof, okay? Yeah, I was very disturbed when I heard about that situation. I don't know how you can listen to 160 dogs, but anyhow. The other thing is, one of my concerns is that I have learned recently is that, and I know the city and the county have their issues.
We do not.
Long standing, okay? But my concern is the city shelter is telling people when you get a stray, you'll
need 10 seconds.
Pardon me?
10 seconds.
Hold it for 10 days. County tells us 15. So to me, I see that as a problem because somebody might not get their dog back if they only hold it 10 days. So I think that's an issue that maybe needs to be explored as well.
Thank you.
To get everybody on the same page.
Thank you.
Oh, Ms. Posey, I would really like to see maybe a forum discussion at the end of the meeting, like we kind of had last time when we talked about spay and neuter, just an open kind of discussion. I think that would be great.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Michelle Vallejos, 93311. I just wanted to jump on what Susan just said about, I can't remember if it was Nick or someone had brought the idea of maybe having an actual open forum for any issue that could be discussed, a little bit more debate. I think it would really, if a time and a place to have it even once for animal advocates or anything to like really unleash and hear back comments and have actual discussion, it might make the gap between this and that a little bit closer or more understanding. You know, it's hard to sit out there and want to say a lot of stuff and then zip the lip and it goes back to this, you know, private thing where we don't get to talk about it with anyone else except for amongst each other, which we typically always think the same thing. And just wanted to say that. I thought that would be fun and great. And I don't remember why I actually came up here, but I have another minute. I try to read the ordinance, and it's really hard for me to understand. I know that there is the sale in public spaces of dogs is not allowed, like, you know, parking lots of Walmart. Does this, like, apply to online now, like Craigslist or Facebook or Connected? And I'm not, you know, a breeders who sell their dogs is one thing. I'm talking backyard, puppies for sale, free puppies, puppies all day, puppies, puppies, dogs, dogs, dogs. Are they mandated by anything to where they cannot do that?
There's no restrictions online. No.
We've gone this route with New Chamber too. You know. There's no.
Awesome. It's not awesome. Right. I still have 18 seconds, so I'm going to think about something else.
There's that one limit per property per year.
Yeah, I'm trying to screenshot it and like monitor it, but then a year goes by. Like, I don't know if that, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. 5 seconds. Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Can I comment on that?
Okay.
I love that idea of open forum. We've had a couple of ad hoc situations that occurred when we didn't have a quorum up here, so we ended up just, you know, shooting the you-know-what. Actually, Nick ran that, and it was actually about the planning issues that came up. And I do like that idea, which is usually why I'm the last one out of here, because I do try to have kind of a conversation and forum with everybody after the meeting. And I always get in trouble because they want to close the room and I'm still in there. And then last time my car got locked in the parking lot. But I appreciate that. I don't know the solution to it, but I do appreciate that. When Supervisor Maven first started the partnership, you know, it wasn't a formal commission like this, so we did have a lot more open discussion.
A lot more latitude there.
Yeah, a lot more latitude. But unfortunately, in order to make this entity work and do what it's supposed to do, we do have to follow these rules. So,
and we unfortunately have limited time in this room. We're only here till 8 o'clock, so it's certainly something we can try to flush out at some point.
And any forum discussion with more than two commissioners would have to be posted under the Brown Act and would still have to follow
protocols.
Yep.
All of this.
Right.
So maybe we can have mini forums with just two commissioners or something.
Yeah, as long as it was just two commissioners, you'd be fine.
Or just don't let any commissioners come at all and let the real people talk about it.
There you go.
They are real people, Liz. They are real people.
Thank you. Next.
Speak for yourself.
Hey, I can't come.
It's Wally Joe. I live in 93308. I'm going to caveat to what Michelle had started to talk about the puppy. It's his puppy season, obviously. And we've had at least two litters of puppies that have had parvo that were rescued, that were dumped. And, I mean, everyone knows it could cost thousands of dollars, depending on how many puppies are there. I think probably educating, one, the public on the animal control laws, as far as that goes. And then if we see a litter of puppies they're being advertised, and then turn around, and then 2 weeks later, they're the ones, exact same ones we get dumped. What would you recommend the best avenue as far as reporting it to animal control, as far as, you know, us collecting the data from Facebook, pictures, vet bills, and then turn around and then handing it straight to you guys to take care of? Because if we were able to report these unlicensed breeders that are, I mean, decimating the trade, if you ask me. I mean, when you have purebred Dobermans that are basically thrown out like trash, you know, and those are the ones that had parvo. They lost two puppies, I think it was, and then the other five are fine now, but, I mean, we need to educate people so that way if these people are not licensed, they don't have the right permits, then we need to be able to do something. If there's a streamlined approach to it, can you please let us know so we can actually try to make even more of a difference. And I still got 31 seconds.
Are you saying that?
I mean, it's just simple things like if they're permitted, do they have like vaccinations? I mean, we're seeing puppies on there for sale that are, you know, 4 weeks old.
Oh God!
You know, 3 weeks old, and some people are actually harvesting puppies. Then they turn around and they become victims of puppy flippers. You know, and then these people can become very violent. And so we get to see that portion of it from the ground level, you know, and it hasn't even gotten to you guys yet. So it's disgusting because.
Are you saying that you know who these people are? Are you seeing on Facebook?
Oh, we'll find out. I mean, I'm just saying that when you see it on Facebook, you know, unfortunately, there's 15 pages to go look for lost and found animals,
right,
and animals for sale. But when you do the legwork and you go back and you track it, and you see this person that had these, you know, 8 Dobermans for sale, and then all of a sudden, you know, it goes, the price drops, and it drops again, and then all of a sudden, when they're about 3 or 4 weeks old, they figure out they have parvo, and then guess what happens to them? They're in a bag on South Cottonwood, or they get dumped off behind a restaurant at MLK, you know, and then it's people like us in the room, we get called, we go restaurant, and next thing you know, one of the first things we do, take them to the vet, see if they're all right. Well, guess what? To see if they're chipped. Next thing you know, we've got a contaminated situation because you got everywhere that you walk those puppies. You know?
And so what you'd like to do is do some sort of streamline to get...
If we could collect all the data, basically the hand animal control packet says, here's this, this is the last known address of this individual, this is where we believe these puppies came from, and possibly have an officer go out and say, you know, but it's only going to be our word against theirs at that point.
Right.
You know, because if he doesn't have the puppies anymore... But if he's got a picture of his face with holding the puppy and he's looking at the guy at the door, you know, I see the potential of the judge saying, well, how'd you get this information? Well, at that point, I mean, I think that the legislature, or not the legislature, I think the judges, they really need the ones, they need to be educated on animal control laws.
Oh, yeah.
And take it more seriously. But, I mean, or have like an animal court by itself.
Definitely.
I'd use a box.
We thought about
thank
that.
You all.
Give us your opinion.
I don't know. Logistically, seeing a picture of a person on Facebook with a litter of puppies and then finding those puppies sick or deceased somewhere in Bakersfield, logistically, it's impossible to prove that they're the same animal. They could look similar, but it's not. I was an officer for 7 years. I've had video footage of a dog attacking a horse that I knew was that dog, and I went to a court of law, and the judge chewed me out. Because how do you know that that's the same dog? So it's almost impossible to take a picture and say, that's the same guy, that's the same dog, he abandoned those animals. There's always information that you guys are going to get, the general public is going to come across that we don't and we can't. Because internally, we've even discussed, okay, if we get to the, how can we investigate and enforce commercial animal facility permit usage? We have to prove that somebody's had more than 1 litter per year on a property. How do I prove that that dog has had that litter? How do I prove that this is the owner? And how do I make contact with them without them knowing I'm an animal control officer? And we've even considered creating dummy Facebook profiles to try and investigate. And we have to some extent. But it's a logistical nightmare to try and hold somebody accountable based off a photo. I mean, when we're talking about somebody who's abandoning animals, they have to be caught red-handed in order to be able to hold them accountable in a court of law. But I would make a recommendation. I was going to say this during the director's report. Anybody who knows me knows that my door is always open. You want to contact me, I'll give you my email address. I'll give you my phone number. Michelle, I don't know how many times I've talked to you on the phone. She has my email address. Danny, how many times have you been in my office?
What?
If you want a forum, come and speak to me. If you have information that you think somebody's doing something illegal that's in the county that I could do something about, send me an email. If you want the forum, I'm your forum. My door is always open. I've always been that way and I will always operate that way. You're not always going to get the right answer that you're looking for. But I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to tell you whether there's something we can do about it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wally. And I do want to say education is key in this matter, as it is across the board, ultimately. A simple thing as a vaccination could have prevented those puppies.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I think it's prudent, you know, we have the great benefit of our vaccination clinics and our vouchers and everything else. And it's so imperative that we get our community to be aware so that they can partake in that. And because it benefits them, it benefits our community, animal control, the animals themselves, and the health of our community.
Absolutely.
Because if we have sick animals, we have a sick community in a sense. So thank you for bringing that to us.
Can I make a comment on that?
Okay.
Because we are upset.
Yeah, because you haven't, yeah, so.
Terry Kahn to Ashby. Should I say
yeah.
That?
Okay.
Let me go. All right. Terry Contehatchee, what I got real interested in when you said that you see them, they're for 4 weeks old, 5 weeks old. State law requires them to be 8 weeks old before they are sent to a new home. If there's any way that they can be identified as being less than, they're violating state law, and I'm sure Nick would love to jump on that. But that's one way, other than vaccines and all that, that's hard to... Age, though, age can be proven pretty easily, especially at that age. So that would be maybe one way to start getting these people, because they do want to get rid of them before they actually start eating solid food, because then they cost them. I know, it's terrible.
Okay. Well, see, Paul, you were the last one in that row. Did you speak yet, ma'am?
No.
Okay, then if you want to come on up. I'm sorry, were you the back row? That's okay. Do you guys mind if I work my way back across? Okay.
Hello, Stacy Steffi, S-T-E-F-F-E, zip code 93306. I understand that Ms. Anderson in particular is more about education versus legislation, but I think it's fair to say that really to be educated, you have to have the desire to want to be educated, or you have to care. And I think what's happening with a lot of like these backyard breeders that we keep referring to and these sick dogs is that people are aware when they're selling these sick dogs. They don't care. So that's, I think, what the problem is we understand that you can educate people all day long, but then they don't care. So now if they don't care, you have to do something that has some kind of a consequence. And I think that's where the concern of the lack of laws that we have come into play, because if there's no laws in place, there's no ramifications, there's no consequences, therefore it doesn't matter that you sell sick, dying dogs. There's no law that says you can't. There's no law that says you can't breed this dog. The laws are very, you know, it's hard to interpret, because I was reading some old articles, supposedly back in 2010, there was some legislation passed that said something about breeding limits to one litter per year, and that people had to print on the ads permit numbers. I also understand it's been said that it doesn't refer to digital, and that seems like a pretty easy update, being that we're such a digital world. You know, if that current legislation doesn't apply to print, like online print, and it only refers to old school print, I think that that should be revised, because if you guys... I'd be happy to supply you with a list of Facebook group pages that you could join, and you could see the amount of puppies that are being sold that are underage, that are sick, people posting, my dog has parvo, what do? I saw about 10 of those in the last, like, 2 nights. And people aren't taking these dogs to the vet. They're doing home remedies with ginger and garlic and things like this, and then wondering why the dogs are dying. And then they're dumping them, and then this keeps just seeping into the ground, into everywhere else. So, anyways, I appreciate the educate, don't legislate. But I think that we're past that in this county. I think that the lack of laws has allowed for a different type of breed of person to come about. And it's a very dangerous world out there. And I, again, would encourage you guys to get on Facebook and to take a peek just for one day. And you'd be really shocked at what you see in your own districts that maybe you're not aware of that's happening.
Thank you.
Can I say something to that? It'll be quick. It's about education. Please.
You've already spoken, though. Let me finish everybody else, please. That same row, anybody? Joan, anybody back there?
Perfect.
Yes, ma'am? Come on up to the podium, please.
I'm Teresa Wilson from Tehachapi. Yeah. And, so I'm a neighbor of the guy with the 100 and somewhere between 22 and 60 dogs.
144, to be exact.
Okay. I just know there has been a couple of numbers in there. So I have a questions about why there is no probable cause in there, because let me give you a couple of things, that reasons we called on and different things that we gave every officer that came out. For example, agitation of my goats, they wouldn't eat for days. I know for a fact that they took a picture of dead dogs from my fence over the fence. Their reason for that being okay is dogs getting dog fights, and with them having that many dogs that's going to happen? Why is it okay that he had enough dogs for dog fights to happen for them to be killing each other? The smell from my yard, I can smell 144 dogs and all of their poop that went along with it. I shouldn't have to. They were attacking kids from the bus stops every time they would get out. And yes, that was constant every single day. And they were mean and they were attacking kids. That's not okay. The dogs were inbred so badly they became feral. They had blue eyes. They were blind. I know you guys know this. They had hearing loss. We begged every officer that was coming out, what can we do to fix this? Because we know when something happened, eventually it would, more dogs would get put down. And I know you guys know that that's exactly how that's happened. More dogs got put down. We were trying to help the dogs. And all they ever told us was, there's nothing we can do. There had to have been something that we could have done. And we're being told that there was nothing to be done because all anybody did was call in and say they were off the leash or something like that. And that is not true. Because I can tell you, these are what I called in for. I want to know, how can we say that having 144 dogs was okay? That should never have been okay. And imagine you living where I lived, and you hear the noise of 144 dogs barking all the time. And they told us, dogs are allowed to bark at things. And there's nothing we can do about that, because dogs are allowed to bark at noise.
All right, thank you.
So just to answer your question.
Yes, please.
It's not a question of whether something is okay or not. It's a question of whether it's illegal or not. If I'm an officer and I go out to your house, I can't cite you for being immoral. I can only cite you for breaking the law. Now, there's always an opportunity and a chance to look at the existing laws and create other laws that might allow for some sort of prosecution over something, but it's strictly not illegal for somebody to own 160 dogs over a quarter of an acre. It is strictly not illegal for somebody to have a deceased dog in their backyard. I can't cite them for anything. It's illegal to keep them in a manner that is unhealthy, that can contribute to illness and sickness and disease, but as well as barking. Barking is an infraction that can escalate to a misdemeanor, but it's not going to give me any ability to take dogs from them. And more often than not, we only investigate barking 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, and then after hours at the Sheriff's Department, and good luck getting the Sheriff's Department to come out and investigate barking. I know that that was a frustrating situation out there. But everything that we could cite somebody for, we did. It wasn't until we had enough, and you know, it could be a week-long session to explain the ins and outs of determining probable cause to retain a search warrant to enter someone's property forcefully. But until we have probable cause that a felony is occurring, we cannot enter someone's property and take their animals from them. All we can do is cite them for the crimes that they're committing. And that's what was done at that property. You know, and this goes back a long ways of talking about dog limits on properties larger than a quarter of an acre. Yep.
So it's the quarter of an acre that made a difference?
There is no limit to the amount of dogs you can have when you have a parcel over a quarter of an acre in the county of Kern.
Can I just ask
next
question? Would public health be involved with that?
Excuse me, maybe.
No, or they're not, or they couldn't be.
No,
not a health
hazard.
We tried. I wouldn't want to speak on what public health can and cannot do, but it's pretty safe to say that public health doesn't really have any involvement in it. I guess you could say that the groundwater might be affected in some way, but I think
public health won't respond.
It's a bit of a stretch, though.
I got a quick question, Nick. Can you comment on what other counties do besides Kern? Is this the same throughout California that you can have 144 animals on a quarter acre or larger? Is it legal in other counties to do this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It is?
Mm-hmm. Now, you got to keep in mind that we're Kern County, we're agricultural.
Yeah.
We're a very rural county. You got to compare apples to apples. Metropolitan Bakersfield has a three-dog limit.
Okay.
The unincorporated areas do not. Over a quarter of an acre parcel. It varies wildly. There's other municipalities that are strictly residential, and those laws apply. You asked me if other counties have laws. I'm sure they do. But more often than not, once you get large pieces of property like that in rural areas, there's very little restrictions to the amount of domesticated animals you can have.
Okay, thank you.
This particular ordinance about dog limits was actually created by this commission many years ago and approved by the Board of Supervisors. This topic was discussed at Infinum.
What did they approve?
What Nick just said, that there's no limit.
Liz Key, proud resident of the 5th Supervisorial District. I'm going to go back in history for the benefit of folks who were not there at the time or who have forgotten, and tell you that the whole issue of the number of dogs and the size of property originated with the late beloved John Maven, supervisor from Tehachapi. What happened was Supervisor Maven introduced at the Board of Supervisors a proposal for an ordinance that in the second district, which is where Tehachapi is located, there be a rule about the number of dogs. County Council said, Supervisor, no can do, because there's a boundary between your district and the adjoining district. And that boundary might run down the middle of the street. And you can't have people living on one side of the street with one set of laws and the other side of the street on the other. What Supervisor Maven did was not put his tail between his legs and say, oh well, oh dear, don't know what I can do. He invited people to come to what became known as the Partnership for Animals. We hashed stuff out 15, almost 20 years ago. Commissioner Anderson and I were on a focus group that focused on Kern County Animal Then Control Now Services, and we presented a report to the partnership and to the Board of Supervisors. The commission itself grew out of that partnership. There was no forum like this before then for you to do. So, and I'm bringing up 15 to 20 years ago, just so those of you who think that things are going to happen in the next hour or week or month are sadly mistaken, and you stick around as long as Commissioner Anderson and I have, and then you'll see changes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Liz.
Going down the back row there, anybody else?
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. All righty. That concludes public presentations. Thank you very much. Next, staff announcements.
Is that me?
That's you, dude.
You got the floor. Good evening.
I'm going to start out by thanking everybody who may have voted for us in the Innovation Showdown.
I voted three times.
Good.
Unfortunately, we did not come close to winning.
Oh.
I think we finished with somewhere around 3,000 votes in a couple of big city animal rescues in New York. Ended up getting about 8,000 or 9,000 votes or something like that. But anybody who voted for us, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Welcome.
We're still trying to move forward with an idea similar to that, maybe on a smaller scale. Additionally, if you could spread the word that this Sunday is the second annual. Last year was the first inaugural. I was corrected on that.
First annual. Last year was the year.
See, I heard otherwise.
No. Believe me, this is
what a very good one. What did I heard the first
year? It's the first annual.
Well, it's the inaugural and then the second annual, because the inaugural is the first year and then the second.
No, this is the first annual.
This Sunday is a mix. For anybody who isn't aware, about 6 or 7 years ago, around 2010, we were taking in about 32,000 animals, and we were euthanizing upwards of 22,000 of those every year. It was at that point that we, as an organization, had those blinders on, where you feel like you're the only one that's suffering through that fiasco and chaos every day. We were invited by the Best Friends Animal Society in Los Angeles to take part in a massive adoption event at the La Brea Tar Pits. We drove out there on a Saturday and brought 60 or 70 Kern County dogs. And what we saw was about 80 different organizations, rescues, municipalities, just people that had anything to do with animal welfare was out at the La Brea Tar Pits, and they were promoting shelter animals and adopting shelter animals, and it was just a community feel. You know, it was everybody coming together to promote animal welfare. And we always thought, why can't we do something like that here? So last year was the first year we did that, and it was very successful. We had 5 different municipalities out there with shelter animals. We had probably about 20 different rescue organizations, and probably another 5 or 6 animal-related organizations out there. 2,500 people from the county came out through the gates. Miss Keogh had a clicker, she was counting. 73 animals got adopted from all different agencies throughout the county of Kern, not just us. I think we only placed 20 or 25 animals through adoption. The only thing we failed in was we didn't bring enough animals. So, this Sunday is our mega adoption, whatever you want to call it, first inaugural, second inaugural, whatever you want to call it. It's a mega adoption event. If you already have an animal, come out anyway. There's some really cool things going on. There's going to be some dog agility. There's going to be a lot of different organizations that do some really good work here in Kern County. If you or somebody else is in the market for a new 4-legged family member, it's a good opportunity to go out. You get to see animals from a bunch of different organizations, and it's a shelter animal, so you're saving a life. So this Sunday, 10 to 4 at the Kern County Fairgrounds, mega adoption. Don't forget. First and our second and our
I'm looking it up.
She is.
I'm sure you are. I also wanted to, just for the sake of informing everybody in this room, the few who may listen on the recording, in the past 6 months, animal control officers have effected 8 felony arrests for animal cruelty and neglect, and seized 489 animals. It's about 80 animals a month. And that does include the 144 animals from Tehachapi. So in case you think that the officers are out there and they're not looking into these things, 500 animals have been taken from people in the past 6 months. And that doesn't include 121 animals that happened before 6 months ago. It's quite a bit. There's a lot that's being done. Still more that can be done. But just keep that in mind. On to the director's report. Month of March, 202 animals go to rescue partners. Anybody who isn't aware of what rescue is, the county deals with federal nonprofits, 501c3 nonprofit organizations. There's a partnership that happens, some paperwork that has to be filled out. And once they're partnered with the county of Kern, they can pull animals from the shelter at no cost. And that's a program that saved 202 lives in the month of March. Foster program, 102 animals entered the foster care program in the month of March. We're starting to see more kittens. Let's get to that time of year. I'm sure Commissioner Blackburn will be happy to know that we have more cats than we did a month ago, so Petco should be happy. That's an inside joke. Since the inception of the TNR program in 2013, 7,145 cats have been altered through that program. Our vaccine clinics, again, I said this once before, I think this is a good forum, more often than not, to bring up issues that are related to animal welfare. I know you only have 2 minutes, but I'll reemphasize that I'm right there after the meeting. Anybody who wants my card, that has my email address and my office line, feel free to take it. I make the time for you. If you have a concern, a question, something you feel is not right, evidence, information on something that may be happening, I can lead you in the right direction of something that can or cannot be done, whether it is in the city or the county. It doesn't matter. You can come to me. But the thing I try to remind us all is that when we're talking, especially when we're talking about like parvo in the community, the more vaccines in the community, the healthier the community of animals is. The more people that are aware that there's a vaccine clinic that happens every Wednesday and most Saturdays, and it only costs $10 to get that vaccination, the more people that are aware of that, the healthier the population will be. So if you come into contact with people during your everyday activities, be a little vocal spokesperson for the department. Be a vocal spokesperson for the city of Bakersfield, who has vaccination clinics as well, so that we can get a healthier community. I guess every Wednesday between the hours of 5 and 6:30 p.m., we're out vaccinating. We're at the Fruitvale Animal Shelter with a vaccine clinic where people can obtain the parvo distemper vaccination and the canine influenza vaccination and the rabies vaccination as well. We've been doing that for quite a long time. Anyway, that sheet shows the...
city is 10 to noon on Fridays.
So every Friday from 10 to noon for city residents. Adoptions, 366 animals went to their new adopted families in the month of March. Year-to-date, 1,167 animals. 8 cats adopted through pet co-locations. It's a little bit slow. You know, our shelter staff sometimes... You know, there's something you got to consider also. I mean, when we go out to a piece of property that has 144 dogs, which, by the way, somebody mentioned those dogs are going to be euthanized, and that is not right. I don't know who said that, but that's not accurate. Our goal is to get every one of them homes, and we place 9 of them through adoption, and probably about 40 of them will be at mega adoption this Sunday.
Even the ones that have hearing and blindness?
Absolutely. As long as they're behaviorally sound, which, believe it or not, a lot of them are. You would think that a situation like that would create feral, free-roaming rabid dogs, and that was not the case. What we saw is that majority of them were actually just scared, but were otherwise safe animals to be around. You know, I'm not confident that every last one of those animals will be placed through adoption, but I'm confident that a high percentage of them will. The majority of them are healthy. So enough so that we're able to get them through spay neuter this week and have them available for adoption on Sunday.
That's awesome.
We're not going to market those animals specifically for adoption because we don't like to do that, but they'll be out there on Sunday's book. And if you know rescue organizations who are nonprofits and partner with the county of Kern, please come down and pull some of those animals. Month of March was our...
You can say something about cats in Petco.
That was?
Are you starting to and then you
distracted? It was that 8 cats got adopted from Petco.
I thought I was going to say something.
A lucky shelter pet is waiting for you. I didn't come up with that. But anyway, it was an adoption promotion in Washington. But it was super successful too. Our volunteers. Once again, I remind you, the people to my right are volunteers as well. The person standing across from me is a volunteer that's documenting what happens here.
I get paid. He's talking about her.
Miss Liz Keogh is a volunteer. Danny Spanks is a volunteer. We're not able to accomplish anything without the 140 or so volunteers we have. An example of that is those 144 dogs. Actually, I think it was 143 and a bird.
A partridge in the pear tree?
Yeah. But those animals, we're getting to the point. First of all, just to give you an idea of what happens. You know, a large number of animals like that comes in, they have to be housed somewhere and legally maintained for a specific period of time. And not only that, but, you know, there was illness on property, I believe not as much as you would think. When we seized those animals, I think one puppy that had been born recently had parvo. But once we determined that there was one dog with parvo, you have to assume that they're all exposed to parvo, which makes things complicated because dogs shed parvovirus through their feces, and a lot of those dogs were covered in feces. So our staff and volunteers had to go through and bathe 129 dogs or something like that. And without volunteers, we couldn't do that. And I think Joan actually helped out some of that too, didn't you? Yeah. So again, big shout out to the volunteer. I don't know where I'm going with that, but yeah, so all those animals had to come in, and
volunteers.
And we're also trying to get them socialized too. We're trying to get them out to the play yard to get to come out of their shells, so we get a true idea of their behavior, their demeanor. So again, it's just we have such a dire need for volunteers all the time. You know, if you have the time and you're willing to do it, or you know somebody has the time and willing to do it, come down and fill out an application. We'll find you a job to do, because there's a lot of animals that need. Month of March, 3,070 total hours donated to the department. That's equivalent of 18 staff members. The dollar value that we put on that is $74,939. Calls for service in the month of March, 1,393 total calls for service. Liz,
yeah.
Looks like you're leading.
Yeah.
Your area, Northeast Bakersfield, is leading in calls for service, 362. 19 dogs were returned to their owners in the field in the month of March. 60 dogs were secured on property by animal control officers in the month of March. With that being said, I can answer any questions.
We're all looking here.
The numbers got.
Let the ladies go first. Okay.
Karen, you got anything?
Okay. I did crunch the numbers again this month. Of course, this is month over month on this one, not year to date. But in January, live outcomes were 80%. In February, because of the fighting roosters, we dropped down to 79%. And I was curious before I say the number for this month, but on the other category, we had 44 something disposed of. What was that? More roosters?
Yes.
It was?
Yes.
Okay. Did you say yes or yes?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I figured that's what it was. Now, what I did was
disposal means they came in deceased.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So, not counting the others, just so everybody knows, for the month of March, this last month, we saved 79.5% animals that had live outcomes. And that's what we're looking for, is 90% or better. We're at 79.5. So great job, 3 months in a row. So I know we've got the hard months coming up, but still you've got a lot of momentum behind you. So congratulations to you on that. And with reference to Petco on their 8 dogs, the new manager is a ball of fire. His name is Brett Duncan.
On the way.
Rosedale. Have you met
him? I've spoken with him.
Okay. He's really good. He said he could probably place 40 if he had him. I know there it is. He didn't have any, or maybe there wasn't transportation, but he's ready to crank them out.
He's ready to make cats.
He said dogs.
Did I say dogs? I'm really... Okay.
I knew what you meant, Derek.
Okay, cats. Sorry. Cats. Anyway, he says he could crank out about 40. Per month pretty easily on the cats. Sorry. So anyway, good job on what I've seen here. The numbers are really good, and good job, Nick. Thank you.
I have a question. Consider Lamont Southeast?
Yes.
Okay. And then with our volunteer hours, realistically, I think we're still ahead, and haven't a lot of other departments kind of modeled what we're doing because we've been so successful with our volunteer
county departments?
Other county departments, wherever, you know, because we're able to bring volunteers in and offset it, you know, when we do our numbers as far as, you know, how much money we're saving the county.
I know there's been an attempt by the county at large to incorporate volunteers into other departments. I don't know that it's been incredibly successful, but then again, I don't think there's people that are as passionate as there are in the animal welfare field for any other agency. Maybe Veterans Affairs, they have quite a few volunteers as well, but for animals, I mean, people in here are more passionate than pretty much anybody I've come across in my life, so it's probably why.
I think it's a great job, and I think we're at the forefront, and thank you for everything you do.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Liz.
May I ask Director Cullen a question? And if Liz Keough 93305, 15th Missourial District.
Yes, Lou.
Getting back to education stuff and preventive medicine, if you will, in this month's report you have back from the Lamont Park. It was on the same day that City had one of its now few clinics in the park. I'm not going to go into why, but what we ran into on that day was dank, gray, drizzly, and just at noon when we were ready to take the tents down, it poured. I understood there was quite a different situation in Lamont that day. Would you like to comment on it?
I think we netted $18,000 in vaccinations that day.
Wow. Well, but what I'm talking about, what I was told, was it poured from beginning to end. People were standing in line in the pouring rain. Not three people, not 10 people, but 281, wow, more or less. That there were so many people that they didn't shut down until 1:30 or 2 or something like that. And I think that when we're talking about getting the word out to people, understand what people in Lamont went through that Saturday to get their dogs vaccinated and licensed. Now it's your turn.
Thank you, Liz.
So for those of us who aren't aware, and I'm not saying that all of those 281 people were not voluntarily there.
Oh.
But we have a public, we call it the Public Education and Enforcement Team, the P Team. Basically two staff members, two full-time staff members, an animal control officer and an animal care worker who 40 hours a week, all they do is enforce licensing. So they're consistently knocking on doors, issuing citations and notice to complies. Specifically when we know there's a clinic coming, they'll canvass that area. So when we see a big turnout, it's usually because we canvassed that area. So, although I'm sure there's quite a few residents of those 281 that were there voluntarily, okay, some of them had no choice.
Right.
And we're trying to
the
avoid
same thing and say, always have a
trying to avoid a failure to appear and stood in the rain. So,
Alan only had 20 of his dogs registered, so they always have a choice.
Yeah, this is true.
Awesome,
right?
Thanks, Nick.
Yep.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I know you were waiting for the outcome of the, what was that grant? Ingenuity grant? Your grant?
Innovative.
I was close. To make a decision about the kitten nursery plans. So I was wondering if you have move forward in that process. Do you have any plans or any ideas?
Oh, I have a lot of plans.
Okay. All right, let me rephrase my question. What are you going to do about the kitten nurture?
It's on hold right now. For those of us who aren't aware, we applied for a grant through the Petco Foundation, among other foundations, to support a program that would basically run a kitten nursery at the Lerdo Detention Facility. It's called the Lion Program. That was what that innovation grant was for, which you would be submitting your vote for. We didn't win that grant, but we still do have a grant that we received from the Petco Foundation, the amount of $75,000 a year for 3 years. We're trying to figure out a way that we can still maximize that funding to make something happen as far as the nursery is concerned. So I don't have an answer for you, but it's something that we're continually working on to try to find a way to save those 1,250 kittens that are still being killed every year.
Thank you.
Am I dismissed?
Temporarily.
Cyrus, doing something that's uncharacteristic to me, and I was running around at the last minute trying to get this report done. So I'm handing it out. And I printed more than I normally print. Oh, it's thinned out some. But I don't know if I have enough, but if you guys want to pass these out and everyone take one that wants one, and if there's any left.
Doodle on.
Okay, I am Blake Smith. I am the business manager, and this is about where we are on spay neuter. Because I was doing it on the last minute, which I don't normally do, It's looking like we're going to have to come up with some more funding, or we're going to have to suspend the program. We've done really well with it. And I'm laying this on Nick. He hasn't heard this yet. So, so we're going to have to, yeah, this is just kind of throwing it out there, but I looked at the number of vouchers that we have pending and what our redemption rate is, and well, we're about spent with what we've issued already. So there's some options that we all have to meet to talk about, but I'm not going to complain about success. We will have utilized fully. I mean, we've got at 75% of the year, with 25% of the year to go, we've got 16.51% left. We have fully utilized the $15,000 that we did for our food and ag grant, and we utilized that up in the Lake Isabella area. And we do have $35,000 sitting in the trust fund, but from my initial evaluation, it looks like we're there. So with what we've already issued, the $35,000 is already going to be spent. We were given funding from Petco, and that is, we've got the $10,000 for our share of the Save the Pity program that is spent, and I put another $6,000 up for this month into the low-income vouchers. This report is a work in progress every single month because things change so fast. I don't know what we're going to be doing, okay? There are some possibilities. We did get $75,000 for Petco, and we could use some of that if the boss says it's okay, but it depends on what else he wants to do. Well, I'm sure there's somebody in the room who's wealthy enough to give us another $50,000 to cover the year. That will be helpful. But so that's where we are. We've done awesome this year. We've utilized the funding, and I had to submit the county budget, and I have to put in there our accomplishments, and I put our list of accomplishments, and I had our program coordinator review it for me to make sure I didn't miss something. And when she read what we've accomplished there, all she said was, "It's no wonder we're tired. We've done some good work this year." So,
awesome.
So anyway, any question? Any suggestions? Questions?
So are you saying, contrary to what you said earlier about telling people everything, can we quit telling people that they'll fix your kit for free? Everybody I come into contact with, I'm out picking up.
Don't tell anybody anything until we have a third, and we'll announce it when the time comes.
Okay.
But, we are, but I felt like I needed to say something today for them, and so that in 2 days we're not saying we don't close everything off and announce it to the world and we haven't given them a heads up.
Right.
So don't say anything today. Don't say anything until you get anything formal. And I hate doing what I just did. I really do, because I don't want rumors to go out. I don't want misinformation to go out. So don't say anything at all until you get something formal. Okay? I just want them to know that we've done really well this year and we're almost out of money. Okay?
Hey, Blake, you mentioned $75,000 from Petco a couple of times. Have we received the $225,000 that we're supposed to?
Okay, we're getting $75,000 a year for 3 years.
So that's how you break it.
We have in our hollow hands the $75,000, the first $75,000 installment. Yes,
oh, okay.
That has been received.
I didn't know it was over 3 years. Okay,
yeah,
that's
yes, right.
Yeah, so it's covered over the next 3 years.
Right. Beautiful. Okay.
And the nice thing is that the stipulation is that we have to use it towards our life-saving efforts. So they give us more. I have a hard time with the amount of discretion they give us because I come from a place where we got federal funding and we had to write this little tightly written scope of work and we couldn't deviate it from one little bit, and we better do every bit of it or we're going to be ravaged over the coals. So, you know, this loosey-goosey Petco way of doing things makes me nervous.
It should make you happy.
That would breathe into it. I'm missing something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. This is funded through the end of the year. When's the end of the year?
Okay, our fiscal year ends June 30th.
Okay.
So we're at, as of March 31st, we were at 75% of the year.
Okay, so we really just have to kind of cruise for a couple months, and then it's a new year.
And then it's a new year.
All right.
And we're hopefully going to be refunded with the $250,000 next year.
Okay.
So.
Thanks, Blake.
Thank you, Blake.
And my wife is in the Costco parking lot as we speak. I need to go pick her up. So.
Okay. Fine, thank you.
They have a food court. She's okay.
I know, she's good.
Corn dogs it is.
Madam Chairman, we need a motion to receive and file.
Okay, if I could have a motion, please.
And I'll second.
All in favor? Any opposed? All right. Okay, next we have Commissioner Announcements and Reports. Commissioner
Taylor,
anything?
Commissioner Blackburn? Those of you that are still from BC, would you raise your hand? Okay. Who is the teacher that...
Holmes.
How do you spell that?
H-O-L-M-E-N.
I'd like to invite... Is it
I'm with Bowler.
What's that?
I'm with Bowler.
A different teacher.
Okay. I'd like to invite that teacher to this... meeting maybe next month, because I'd like to thank the teacher for getting you guys to come here. We're talking about education, right? This is education at BC. You're being educated, even though you're probably required to attend some meeting somewhere, but you came here. So that's a great thing. Pass the word along that, you know, we're this dynamic in this building here. Dynamic group of people. So, tell the teacher, thank you for getting you guys to come here, and I'd like to meet the teacher maybe next month. It'd be a great thing. That's all I have to say.
I'm saving
one. Okay.
I have a handful of things. As our illustrious attorney pointed out, we did not make a motion to receive and file the three things that I brought to provide for everybody. So is it appropriate to do that now?
Yeah, if it has to do with mandatory spay-neuter, you should wait till we get to that on the agenda.
I'll do that. Let's see. Last month, our dedicated and passionate community members mentioned that several of us had expired online. And I don't remember exactly who other than me were expired. But they got on it, and they got theirs fixed. I've been on the phone with Supervisor Perez's office for a while now, and mine isn't fixed yet. But my understanding is that she was supposed to reappoint me, and she told me that she would do that, and apparently it got dropped, and that's why it's not on there, because her office somehow dropped the ball in reappointing. I assume that's the situation for everyone else. So, I'm online, it still says I expired in 2013, not expired in the dead way, but expired in my position here, but verbally I've been told I'm still appointed. And in the interest of transparency, there was also a question about our ethics training, and after the meeting I went and took a look and realized that I was overdue for ethics training. So I did do it in the last week or so, and I've submitted my paperwork, so I just want to make sure you guys are aware of that. Just trying to be transparent. The other thing is I was a hearing officer a few weeks ago. Was it a month ago? I don't know. A while ago. And I don't know if you know, but anytime there's a request for an administrative hearing for something that animal control has come across, animal services, excuse me. Each of us are designated as a hearing officer, and basically through emails they find whichever one of us is available to do that. And I've done a handful of them, and generally I feel pretty comfortable, but this time going in I was completely confused. I did not receive, I received some documentation ahead of time, but I did not get a clear understanding of what my role was this time. So I've had a lot of conversations with Jerry. It was different than the average hearing. Usually it's a dangerous dog type hearing or something along that line, but this was different than that. So I would like to create maybe just a little form that you guys would fill out to explain to us what we are going to be hearing so that I could have prepared myself a little bit better going in, because I was making a decision on something I didn't really know much about at the time. And I don't know, maybe you guys think I'm a pain in the butt, so you're not going to call me again, but because it was kind of a pain in the butt for everybody. But I just, in order to do that with a clear conscience and appropriately, I feel like I needed a little bit more information. So I'm just letting you know that I'm going to come up with that. I don't know if it's something I bring to the commission. Is that something I would like you to present at the next meeting?
I thought we had a list.
We have an agenda to follow, but this is prior to that.
Maybe it was just notes.
Wait, it was an agenda that she wrote up.
We had it to
prioritize.
Okay, yeah, we have a template.
But this would be something ahead of time to let us know what it is we're going to be facing.
Well, if I understand it correctly, because I've done two. Are you talking about a seizure hearing?
Yes.
No, that's not what it was.
Yes, it was.
Well, but it was. Can I talk about it?
Sure.
Without a name?
I can tell you for sure, Commissioner Madigan, it was a seizure hearing that you presided over.
So
same seizure hearings that Commissioner Geary sits on.
So the seizure hearings, you don't get as much information.
Right.
You just get very little information, and you go in and you hear the comments, the testimonies.
I didn't even know what I was deciding.
Well, it's on the record, on the recording, that we talked about it.
Yeah,
and the question was...
But I didn't know until I sat down at the table, so I had no opportunity to research what it was I was deciding. I didn't have a chance to look at the law that was relevant to what I was deciding.
Maybe
it's just my issue.
I have a suggestion. If you'd like to come up with a document that you think would help, send it to me, and I'll see if I can put it into use.
Okay, that's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
Is maybe you're more experienced than I am, and maybe it isn't confusing to her, but it was confusing to me. And so it took me a long time to deal with with what I needed to do afterwards, because I needed to re-educate myself. So that's just a concern that I had. The other question I saw in the news that some horses were brought in from Bit of Heaven Rescue. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to share my experience with Bit of Heaven with everyone. Back when I was a social worker for Kern Regional Center, I understand they had a different owner or manager or whatever, and Bit of Heaven was providing a program for developmentally disabled adults to work at their rescue, taking care of the horses. And at that time, I had mixed feelings. I thought, great, this is a rescue for horses. They're doing a good thing. And the other side of it is I'm always skeptical about who's using our developmentally disabled people to do their dirty work. Anyway, I don't know if they're still doing that, but it just kind of falls into the same category of I had concerns about it at the time, just so you know about that. And that's all I have.
Okay. We're going to move on because we have more things on the agenda. Okay. Old business. Staff referrals. Nothing. Okay. Let's see here. Emergency prep.
Go through real quick. Emergency prep. We will be at the Megan adoption. That's pretty much it for now. Central California Animal Disaster Team will be at the Megan adoption with Kern County Animal Services. Hopefully next to you guys. That's it for that. And the livestock containment. I have sent in a very, very, very rough draft of recommendations, so I'm off my button moving and working on that now.
Perfect. Okay. Item 4, MSN.
Excuse me, can I ask a question about the emergency preparedness real quick? Just, Nick, would you say that this seizure of the 140 plus animals constitutes an emergency?
No. When we talk about emergency, we're talking about a natural disaster.
Okay. For instance, if there was an earthquake or a mudslide, and it hit another shelter in a neighboring county.
Yeah, basically.
Then we would pretty much assist them, right?
Well, yes, but this is more specifically for disasters that hit Kern County that affect animals and a response from our department. If I could, on number four,
yes,
just an explanation.
Okay.
So the mandatory spay-neuter discussion was brought up last month. There was some passionate people that came forward and asked some questions about the feasibility of it. And it was my decision to place it on the agenda under a staff referral because I felt that at the very least, one way or another, it deserved some research to determine whether or not a mandate could work in Kern County. I thought it deserved some research as to what it would cost the county, the potential negatives and positives of it, comparing it to comparable counties, where it succeeded, where it's failed, take into consideration what we've done and what we continue to do, and see the trends and maybe determine based on those trends whether or not adopting something like this would help that or hinder that. I just felt like there was possibly some more research that should be done to make some decision whether or not mandatory spay-neuter is a feasible option now. So I put it on the agenda to throw it to the commission to possibly decide whether that's something that the commission feels a subcommittee should be created to find that information and determine if a recommendation should be made for a mandate or otherwise not. And that's why it was placed on the agenda, is for the commission to make a decision whether or not any further research should be done, whether or not something like that could happen here.
I got a question. Can you dig up that data on what other counties have done, what it would cost, how many more officers it would take, and the pluses and minuses of doing it? Because you have the data there.
I would be more than willing to sit with a subcommittee and help find that data.
Okay.
I can sort of answer that. When this issue came up 10 years ago, one of the documents that we've been discussing that didn't get received and filed was the report that was written by Dave Price, and again, it's 10 years old, but he did do that, and I went through this in a lot of detail before the meeting this time, and he basically proposed several different options to address this in different levels of complexity, and in each one he gave a financial impact. Granted, it's 10 years ago, so the numbers wouldn't be the same. But it would be something to start from if we wanted to look at that. The other thing that was very interesting in here was the five different options. Let me see if I can read them. One was do nothing. One was just beef up the current licensing law. The third one was do a low-cost spay-neuter program, which we've obviously done. The next one was a breeding permit program, but not mandate spay and neuter. And then the last one was spay and neuter, which would include a breeding permit program. I like looking at these options. Of course, the last two are the only ones that are really of any significance at this point. But I think we should look at these as a place to start. And he also mentions in this report, I don't remember exactly where it is, and of course I printed it in a little teeny print, but he did mention some other counties and cities that 10 years ago were doing mandatory spay-neuter, so it would be really nice to go back to those particular, there's 6 counties and 4 cities listed here, so it would be really nice to go back and look at them 10 years later and see what they've done. So some of the research has been done, and I'd be willing to sit on a subcommittee to work with staff, and I'd like to see some members of the community on that subcommittee and take a look at these and do the research and maybe come back with some more information.
So again, my question or my referral to the commission was whether or not the commission, I think, as a majority, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Feels that a subcommittee should be committed to research the feasibility of mandatory spay neuter.
So that's actually two issues before your board. The first one being whether or not to form a subcommittee, and the second being to pick the members.
Okay. More discussion?
Sorry?
Any more discussion?
You know, the thing of it is, you've got the data there, at least, and I'm not sure if I tried to dig up that data, if I could find it myself. So I don't know if we have the tools to do it on our own here as a commission. So do you have the manpower?
What do you mean by tools, Commissioner Blackburn?
To dig up, okay, how much would it cost? How many officers would it take? The pros and cons? What other counties are doing it? What successes or failures they've had? Those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think it would take research to find that information, which is going to be a process. I'm not saying it would be done in 30 days. It might take 6 months. But I don't have that data for you,
okay.
But I'd be more than willing to be a part of any assistance to find that information, to put it together, to determine one way or another whether it's the time and place.
Thank you.
Okay, so
I mean, you know how I feel, but I believe because there is significant concern on people who have been coming to these meetings somewhat regularly in the recent months, we should at least take a look, form a subcommittee, take a look, do some research. That's my opinion.
Okay. I'm concerned about the enforceability of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
How the heck do you do that?
Well, and that would be part of the research.
But just common sense, I'm just asking, knock on doors? I mean, how do you enforce a mandatory spay and neuter? I am not aware of any of the programs that are working right now. So I'm just kind of wondering, if you have to do it now, that's enforced.
I mean, there's different models that are used in different jurisdictions. Some of them have enforcement units that go out in the community, which we obviously don't have. And then some of them are just citable offenses that if your animal is found unaltered, then it's a citation. And a correctable citation for you to fix your animal within a period of time. There's a plethora of different models that are used, all of which will cost resources and money that...
Which we don't have.
But I don't know how much that would be or...
And, Gary, you said we were at over 70% on our euthanasia rate?
Yeah, we are at 79.5.
Is that 79% of adoptable or 79%?
This is 79% of the animals that have come through the system have come out alive.
Okay. And 75% of intakes.
79.5.
Okay.
And let's call it 80%.
The goal is to be 90%.
Second
so intake. So we're right around the corner from that.
We're close.
I mean, it's going by leaps and bounds right now. As far as I'm concerned, it's just
last year we were
incredible.
67 or so, and we had flatlined. And look what we've done now, we're 80%, let's call it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So ultimately, we need a motion. Somebody.
You need a motion to form the subcommittee, and you need a second.
Well, I'll make the motion, obviously.
Do we have a second?
I don't have the time to serve on the committee myself.
And Gary and I are already on one.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. I've got two kids.
Motion fails for lack of a second.
Okay. The answer's right. All right.
Okay.
Item H.
Item H.
Lisa's not here, correct?
Oh, you have to go on and we receive and file these three.
Oh, yes.
Okay, do I have a motion?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Motion to receive and file. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. All right. Nick.
Motion to adjourn?
No.
Wait, Nick has to speak.
He's
I have. impeached.
So Commissioner Blackburn, Commissioner Blackburn had asked us to present a recap of the trip that Lisa Richardson and Yana Al-Wahhabi are cross-coordinating trip to Austin, Texas, at Austin Pets Alive. Lisa Richardson is indisposed. She will be for the foreseeable future on Wednesdays. She would not be able to make it here, to be honest with you. I won't get into the specifics, but so she did provide me a synopsis. It's just an email, and I'll read the synopsis. And by the way, keep in mind, this was a personal trip that she took. This was not a county trip. November 3rd, 2017 is when she visited. She visited with the Director of Life-Saving Operations at Austin Pets Alive, Mike Cavani. Austin Pets Alive pulls animals that are typically euthanized in a shelter setting. For example, large dogs that need behavior support, unweaned kittens, puppies, parvovirus, and cats with more. Initial behavior evaluations are completed by a behavior assessment team, which determines the action plan for the animal. The dogs are then color-coded according to behavior, blue, yellow, silver, and red. All dogs are walked 3 times a day, socialized, and trained utilizing play groups and individualized obedience training by staff and volunteers. They have a robust volunteer base. A staff member who is a certified behaviorist trains all volunteers, and they are assigned coordinating color codes that coincide with the color code assessment of the dog. Volunteers have ongoing training and are moved up in the color-coded system as they complete the different levels required. We actually like that aspect of their operation. Austin Pets Alive does not complete any safer testing and believes that animals should be evaluated continuously during the time that they're at the shelter. We like that as well.
Yes.
One of the main focuses is on play groups. We're trying to adopt that now, where several dogs are introduced and allowed to play for a period of time. Play groups provide dogs with exercise and social interactions and are always conducted with at least 3 staff or volunteers present. Lisa asked, how could a play group setting apply to our shelter? Well, she said there's several challenges with instituting a play group setting. First, we would need a behavioralist, which we do not have, nor do we have any funding to have. Second, the current play yard would need to be retrofitted, and several more play yards would need to be added. Third, more volunteers and staff would be needed to institute these group settings. A lot of the things we do or do not do would help if we had more volunteers. Currently, we do have approximately 20 volunteer dog walkers, just not enough to do the behavioral assessments like that. A ringworm area was not able to be toured while they were there due to construction. They currently have a small isolation ward for parvo-positive puppies, which are actually our veterinarian is currently working on a parvo isolation in the county shelter. Only staff assigned to the parvo ward are allowed to enter due to isolation protocols and staffing. We are currently unable to house any ringworm in our shelter. Their kitten nursery was at a different location and closed for the season while she was there. And that pretty much concludes her trip to Austin, the Austin Animal Shelter.
What's their save rate currently?
I have no idea.
I think it's like 95%.
They are over 90%.
Yeah, I agree. Something like that.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the input. And
I'm sorry she couldn't be here. But
tell her thank you.
I will.
Awesome.
Tell Lisa thanks for the data.
I will.
Something to strike.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thank you.
Motion to adjourn until Wednesday, May 16th. Do I have a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? No. All right. Thank you all.